It will cost you 3 times the annual salary of an employee if you lose them within the first year. The time and the money spent trying to find the right person is time you're not focused selling an Amazon, building your business, investing in other staff, which slows that down, which means now you're over here focusing on hiring someone new.
You're listening to the Kniepin' It Real Jodcast. This is your host, Seth Kniep.
This is Seth Kniep, Kniepin' It Real. Today I'm talking about how to hire people. If you've ever had to hire staff, this is one of the most important things you can do for your company. If you grow a company and it becomes bigger and bigger, you're going to find that the skills required to start it are not the same skills required to scale it. And you might find that you just kind of suck at running a company versus starting a company, and you'll start finding different strengths and weaknesses that you never knew you had. Now, some people are really good at different stages of a company. For example, you could bring in Bobby McGee to start the company. He does great. But as soon as it has more than 5 staff, he starts to fall apart because he has to think different and requires a different set of skills, such as tools, systems, scalability, hiring and firing, etc., and a lot of managing and coaching. So then you bring in Lucy Pickleberry to pick up the game from there and to start scaling the company. Once it reaches like 20 to 25 employees, she falls apart because you even need a higher level. You can't micromanage. You have to actually have people who represent other people, trust what they say, listen to them, and implement. Just One Dime has reached this stage more than once. And as of within the last 12 months, we realized we really need a president. Now, don't worry, I'm not leaving Just One Dime. I'm here. I'm still the CEO. I will be casting vision. I will continue to do what I do. But I found that I'm only really good at a few things. I'm really good at starting and running businesses. I'm really good at selling on Amazon. I'm really good at communicating content. Pretty much everything else I suck at. So that is why we decided to hire a president. Now, the president's job is to run the company and then to hire people, recruit staff, and build teams and create systems. We need someone who's very different than Seth Kniep. I'm really good at getting people started, getting them moving, motivating them, and scaling Amazon stores. But I'm not good at running a big team of staff and scaling it. I'm just not. And so if you want to continue to do the things you love with the people you love, you have to hire out for your weaknesses. There's a philosophy out there that says you need to just constantly focus on your weaknesses so you're a well-rounded person. I don't believe in such a thing as well-rounded people. I believe people should focus on the few strengths that they have, and then everything else they delegate or hire to other people to do for them. So the journey I'm going to take you on today has been one heck of a journey. I have learned so much through this process about hiring a president, and I'm going to share with you what I have learned. No matter where you are in your stage of building a business, you will find the most important thing you can do for your company when it comes to building a team, when you start to have more than just you, yourself, and me, is you have to find the right people. You've heard me talk about people, time, knowledge, money, the 4 most core assets, and that people are the most important. Well, they are also the most difficult to find and to keep. And so that requires a lot of training and understanding, skills that I previously didn't even know I needed years ago. And in the last couple of years, this is something we've had to work on a lot. And we made a lot of mistakes along the way, and I'm happy to share those too. Let me begin by saying, by the time I finish this podcast episode, my goal for you is that you understand some of the most important things to do and not to do when looking to build a great team. This will save you so much time and so much money. If you don't do it right, based on statistics, specifically from Recruit Rockstars written by Jeff Hyman and multiple surveys, that it will cost you 3 times the annual salary of an employee if you lose them within the first year. The time and the money spent trying to find the right person is time you're not focused selling on Amazon, building your business, investing in other staff, which slows that down, which means now you're over here focusing on hiring someone new. And if you lose the person, you start all over, not to mention that can be discouraging and disheartening to the morale of your staff when they see people coming and going quickly. You don't want that to happen. So I'm going to walk you through the process. The first thing I learned, and thank you very much again to Jeff Hyman. He's been a huge help in this area. If you don't know who he is, recruitrockstars.com is the website you need to go to. I'm not an affiliate. I simply hired his services. I read his book. He counseled me. He gave me a ton of training, and I am a much better person as a result. So thank you, my friend Jeff. The first thing you want to do is understand that there are two parts to finding a great person. One part we're going to call DNA, and the other part we're going to call competencies. Someone else might say culture fit is similar to DNA, although I like to think that DNA is something more innate to someone and who they are. It's a really hard to train DNA. It's how they operate and think. It has a lot to do with how they were raised. So some pretty core, deep values and bad practices and habits that are really hard to change, and you don't want to spend the time trying to change core values. You need to have people who already have them. When you have multiple team with DNA, they make up what is called the culture. And I really think the word culture has been thrown around so much. It's become so trendy. It's lost some of its meaning. Like, oh, we got great culture. We have a ping pong table. You get a gym membership. We got a cool office. You know, it has sort of a new authentic feel. And I'm not saying that stuff is bad, but that is not what makes great culture. There's only one thing that makes great culture, and that is people with great DNA. You could have the most beautiful, sexy office in the world, the best location, the best benefits package, all the gym memberships in the world, and the ping pong table along with foosball to top it off. But if you don't have people with great DNA, your culture is going to suck, and it's going to be a difficult place to grow. You will spend a lot of time and energy trying to manage and deal with problem people instead of investing in great people who want to grow your company. So on one side, when you're looking for someone, 50% needs to be their DNA. Their thought pattern, how they think, their core values. On the other side, it needs to be their competency. And I'm talking about their skills, their abilities, what they're good at. And those things are more trainable than the DNA, which is why if you have two candidates, Bobby McGee and Lucy Pickleberry, and Lucy Pickleberry has better DNA than competency, just a little, but Bobby McGee has better competency than DNA, who are you going to hire? Lucy Pickleberry every time. Because competencies are much easier and more cost-effective to train towards. DNA is much more difficult. So you have these two pieces. You have the DNA and you have the competency. DNA is more important, but competency matters as well. Now, the way I'm going to show you how we did this so that you can apply it to your situation is I'm just going to show you exactly what we did. First, let's talk about DNA. The DNA of Just One Dime is spelled out in the acronym CHOO. C-H-O-O. Think of like a choo-choo train. C stands for communicate. And the DNA there is when you communicate, you must communicate with high other awareness. You can always tell when someone doesn't have very good other awareness because they say something and they expect the other person to get it, but they're not putting themselves in their shoes and anticipating all the ways it could be misinterpreted. It means also that if you say something and there's not total calibration and understanding, you ask them to repeat it back to you in their own words to make sure you are aligned. This will save you a host of problems when scaling a company. The next acronym is H, which stands for hustle. It simply means people at Just One Dime get a lot done in a short amount of time. We work hard and smart. We move quickly. We don't have that mindset, you know, back when I worked for Apple and you have miles and miles of cushion over here of money because it's like billions of dollars worth and miles of staff over here and miles of cushion from ever getting fired. And you just kind of take your time and you have all this. I'm not saying Apple's not efficient, but the mindset that comes with working for a corporate company can bring that mentality. When you work for a massive company, you kind of take for granted that there was a day when this company started in a garage and one single mistake could completely floor that company. So with hustle, you have to work hard, you have to work fast, you have to get a lot done. The final two letters standing for this acronym CHOO, C-H-O-O, are O for ownership, and O for obsess. Now, ownership simply means I take ownership when I make a mistake. I'm not afraid to share it. I bring the mistake to my manager immediately. I don't wait around. And I never bring a problem without also bringing a solution. I heard that Elon Musk would fire people who just brought problems, but no solution. Like, it's easy to find problems. It is hard to create solutions. And you want a team that is comfortable and used to taking ownership for things. And by ownership, I don't just mean, hey, I messed up and here's what I did and here's what I'm gonna do to prevent it from happening in the future. It also means owning the project. In other words, instead of just mindlessly doing tasks, you're thinking about the end goal. You're owning it as if it was your own business. And that brings us to the fourth, and most certainly not the least, and that is obsess. You obsess about the end result. There's a difference between doing a task and thinking about the end goal of the task. If someone could say, Seth, I need you to go hire someone for the marketing department. Okay. And so I think, okay, I just do this task. I list the resume on a resume website like Indeed, and then I do the interviews, and then I check references, and then I hire them. That is not obsessing about the end result. The end result means help me understand why we need this person. Help me understand what this person's gonna do. Help me understand what you want this person to accomplish in the first 90 days. Now I'm obsessing about the end result. I'm thinking about the most effective way to pull this off. You see the difference? It's one thing to do a task. It's another to obsess about the end result that you want. So those are the four DNA of Just One Dime. Now, when you hire for someone, it is so important that you understand and write down in advance the exact DNA you want. You can't just go blindly into it. You know, here's the reality. A lot of CEOs, they hire someone because they like them. That's stupid. Do not hire someone because you like them. Whether or not you like them is almost irrelevant. How you feel about them is going to be biased, I promise. You know why? Because we tend to like people who reflect us. I'm not talking about values, I'm talking about personality. And as a result, if you hire another you, what's gonna happen? Boom, you're gonna have headbutts. You're gonna have a potential crash because you're supposed to hire out your weaknesses, not your strengths. When we put together our DNA, we didn't just sit down and think, what are four really cool sounding things that anyone would love to read about a company on a page? I'm so tired of seeing that on Amazon. Oh, we're a small family company and, you know, we care about the world and we really value this. And just slapping it on there because it sounds good. The way Josiah and I, my business partner, put this together is we thought back over the last almost decade since Just One Dime has existed. What are the core values that we have lived? Like literally, this is who we are. It's not who we want to be. It's not who we aspire to be. It's in our DNA, in Seth Kniep's DNA, in Josiah's DNA. And it went back to Chu. Communicate, hustle, take ownership, and obsess about the end result. Now, when you decide who you want for the position, you can't just look at your company DNA and say, make sure they match that. That's a given. You have to go one level deeper and find out what other DNA do they need that are unique to this position. Now, I'm going to share with you the exact DNA we needed before we hired, and we did hire, a president for Just One Dime. A high degree of humility. Because I'm always in front of the camera. I'm very much a public person. I'm very semi-very extroverted. I like communicating. I like casting vision. We need someone who's completely comfortable being behind the scenes and never feels like that's a threat or competition to them. We're not looking for another person like me to be behind the camera to lead the company. I'm already doing it and I do that well. We need someone who can focus on operations, behind the scenes, systems, tools, things that I am not strong in, things that I frankly am terrible at. Number two, unassailable integrity. Now, you would think this is a given for any company. In any company, of course, they're going to say that. But the reason it's so unique to this position is hiring a president literally could make or destroy your company. The higher the level of the position, the greater the risk as well as the opportunity. Kind of like investing in stocks or investing in done for you. The more you invest, the greater the risk, but also the greater opportunity to make a lot of money. That's why there's a huge vetting process. If people had any idea how many people we have rejected from the Done For You program. This is not some willy-nilly, send us 3,000, everything's good. No, ma'am. This is a very stringent process we go through on the back end before we ever see them face to face. I mean, we're not even going to talk to them if we have a lot of reasons to believe they wouldn't be potential. That interview is not just some happy, let's shake hands and get to know each other. We've already done a lot of vetting. Now it's the final gateway to see, is this the kind of person we want to trust our time with as they entrust their money with to work together? The same is true when you're hiring for someone for a company at a high level position. The next DNA, so first we have high degree of humility. Number two, unassailable integrity. Oh, and by the way, that integrity is also important because the Amazon space is full of so much mixed messages. So many people who are hawking a course, but they know nothing about selling on Amazon. So it is important this person embodies who we are from day one, from the very first day. I mean, before I ever even did any video on YouTube, I'm an Amazon seller. And all of our coaches are Amazon sellers. And they have to submit reports twice a year showing, hey, here's my profit and loss statement. Here's my revenue. Here's my profit. Here's screenshots of my Seller Central account showing that they're not just making money, but that they're growing their Amazon store so they're qualified to train others. That has been true since day one. Well, we can't just bring in someone who likes what we do. They have to have the same level of integrity. The next DNA is not a yes person. Because I'm a very intense, I'm very hard driven, I just go and I go and I go. They have to be someone who's comfortable saying, I don't agree with that, but they have to use logic and data to back it up. Just because someone feels a certain way won't convince me. You have to have the data. You have to have the evidence. I have to see the numbers in order to be able to say, okay, you're right, change my mind. And there are situations where I might say, look, I think you're an idiot doing that, but go ahead, I'm fine. I'm not gonna veto it. Let's see how it goes. And hopefully there's no, I told you so at the end. By the way, if you only hire yes people, you're gonna destroy your company. Now, if you hire a bunch of defiant, rebellious idiots, that's not gonna help either. You need people who know how to push back, but they need to be data driven, not emotionally driven when they push back. The next one is values to do the things you love with the people you love. This has been our motto from the beginning. It has not changed. It will never change. We teach people and help people grow money so they have margin to do the things they love with the people they love. Well, this person has to love that. And one of the first things that we found is this person talked to his wife. She gave counsel, she gave her feedback, and they had to come to an agreement on whether or not this was the right thing because she wants to protect her husband's time and rightfully so. And he wants to protect the time he has with his kids and rightfully so. That already embodies who we are and what we do. The next one is they hustle. They get stuff done. They don't sit around. They don't wait around. They move quickly and they move to action fast. And finally, the last is they're results focused. They're obsessed with the results and they own them. They don't just say, oh, that's great. We got more sales, or oh, that's great. We got more hits to our website. Oh, that's great. This store is doing really well. They actually have to think about what is the end result. How is this going to help our brand? How is this going to hurt our brand? They have to think about that whole process and love doing that. There's such a difference between walking to a company and getting paid to just do tasks versus getting paid to really bring change. And I mean lasting change. Okay, so those are the DNA we wrote down that's required for this position. Now let me flip the coin and look at the other side. And now we're going to talk about competency. Competency means skill. I'm not referring to how someone thinks, I'm referring to what they are good at doing. And the only way to find out what someone is good at doing is by finding out what they've done in the past. Like in an interview, the worst thing you can do is say, so how would you build up our marketing? Or how would you? I mean, those are great questions towards the end of the interview to think of how they're thinking predictively, but that is zero proof on their ability. How would you run Facebook ads? Oh, we would do this and this. That doesn't mean jack. What you need to ask is, how did you build a Facebook campaign? What was the click-through rate? What was the cost per company, the acquisition cost? How quickly did you build the audience? How vetted were those followers and how many of them ended up investing in that project that you launched? See what I mean? Those are provable numbers. You want to look for someone who has facts. And so that's why the first thing on here is they must achieve $9 million per month revenue by end of 2022 at 30% net profit. That's measurable. This is something they have to do. This is a requirement. This is a great filter because that number will terrify the heck out of some people. But not us, and not the right person. You have to recruit, top grade, and lead a small high-performance team of employees and contractors, design an effective organizational structure. So they literally have to recruit. Top grade is an old term referred to a process of recruiting. I'm not going to get into right now. And then lead a team. They have to know how to build teams from scratch. If you want to scale your company, you don't want to just bring in someone who does tasks. I mean, that might work for the first couple of years. At some point, they need to build a team so you can focus on your strengths. Next, you have to transition the brand from less Seth-centric to more Jod-centric. In other words, it's not bad that I'm behind a microphone, but more and more, you'll probably see me talking on my own Seth brand. So Jod has its own three legs to stand on. And it's already started to happen over the last few years, which is great. But we don't want everything depending on my face, because what happens, as Kevin O'Leary loves to say, if Yellow Bus comes around the corner, and by the way, there's like four buses right out this window, so the chances of this are a bit higher than most work locations, I get hit by a bus and I die. That would be bad. I mean, very bad for my wife, for my kids, for the staff, but it would also be very bad for the company. It's kind of like, think Gary Vee. I mean, the company, his brand very much depends on his face. If he died, that would be pretty catastrophic. Amazon, on the other hand, is more of a hybrid brand, kind of like Steve Jobs and Apple used to be. You know, Steve Jobs died, and he did. Apple, it hurt Apple, but they continued on. Apple had developed its own brand strength. Amazon has developed its own brand credibility apart from Jeff Bezos. Now, he has credibility, but it's more of a hybrid, kind of like Elon Musk and Tesla. That's the kind of brand we are going for, because we realize if you have someone who is somewhat of a charismatic personality, myself, then naturally they're going to leverage their strength to motivate and to bring people together. I'll keep using that. But you don't want the entire company depending on that, because it does put it at huge risk. Now, I'm not one to say it is wrong to have a personality-centered brand. I'm just saying it's more risky. And so we need someone who can help transition us the right direction. This next capacity is so important. It's build metrics-oriented marketing team capable of testing and iterating new customer acquisition strategies and channels. Let me say something very bluntly to you. We suck at marketing. I've had people say, oh man, you guys are such great marketers. I'm good at communicating. I'm good at sales. Yes, that is not the same thing as marketing. Sales is where you talk to someone, you persuade them to take action, whether it's to go watch a movie, to eat at a restaurant, or to buy a product. That's important, and I'm good at it. Marketing is building a system that changes how people think about your company and your product and brings them, warms them up so the sales team can close the deal. You see the difference? We've never been great at marketing. We've created very few funnels. We've created like two or three in almost 7 years. Like, it's crazy if you think about it. Almost everything has been organic. But see, it's great, but we don't want to rely on Seth's charisma to grow the company, because again, that puts a lot of pressure on me and that's risky. So we need a marketing team that can market and reach people who aren't being helped, who don't know who Just One Dime is, who don't understand the opportunity they have to invest in real estate or Amazon or build their own Amazon store. The next one is extend Jod's credibility and authority to further differentiate from competitors. That's one of the reasons you guys see some of us doing what some people would call silly videos. But we do like to have fun, guys. Sometimes we'll do these shorts. They're 59 seconds long. They're on YouTube. And our staff puts together a skit to teach a timeless lesson. You know, like the one where I'm proposing to my wife and I'm like about to, she thinks I'm going to, you know, snap out a ring, and I snap out an Amazon product. It so happens to be a fidget spinner, and I'm talking about it. And her face is like, you got to be kidding me. That's a timeless principle. A lot of entrepreneurs can relate to that. Well, how does that differentiate us? Well, it's really hard to copy that. We've had so many people copying our content and trying to repeat what we do. You can't copy that. You can't copy your headquarters. You can't copy your staff. You can't copy our DNA. That kind of stuff is timeless, baby. It takes a lot more time, a lot more money, a lot more patience to grow, and you won't be as profitable for a while. I don't care. We're building a lasting brand. Our passion and vision is to be the industry standard for Amazon sellers and for online entrepreneurs, and we're moving fast in that direction, which I'm very happy to tell you. The next one is ensure repeatable, scalable processes. Now, I had no inkling even what this meant just 5-6 years ago until I met this dude named Josiah, who is really good at this, building out systems on the back end to scale your company. Well, we need someone who can help with that, who can do it at another level that Josiah could not do. What it means is, instead of spending all the time answering every question yourself personally, you have staff do it for you. Instead of responding with a custom answer in every email, you have a template to respond to more general questions and then a customized version of that for more specific questions. Instead of having a phone call that someone who's a member of Just One Dime can just call and talk to someone every single time, you have a list of the most common questions, which reduces the time and the cost of having an entire team answering questions all day so they can focus on creating more content, which will help this customer do a lot better in the long run and everyone benefits. That's an example of a scalable system. Here's one concept that I find priceless. First, get software to automate everything you can. Then hire people who do the things that robots and systems and software cannot do. When you do that, you now have a scalable system. But if every single time you open an Amazon store and launch a product, you have a different method, you don't have a template by which to do it, you're gonna spend a lot of time constantly reinventing the wheel. But you see, why would we repeat what the Egyptians did for us thousands of years ago? It makes no sense. The next one is free up the founder, the co-founder, me, myself, and I, so I can focus on helping you more. I can create more content. I can teach you so much about so many things I've learned, but I can't do that when I'm over here trying to focus on the back-end operations of a company that doesn't leverage my strength. And last and not least is provide clear communications and priorities throughout the company. You have to have priorities so people know what to focus on and what not to. One of the most difficult things for a company is trying to do everything. You sit down, your Slack explodes. Literally the other day, I had over 500 messages in Slack. Do you know how long it would take for me to get through that? So you have to prioritize before I even look at that. What do we need to focus on first? Amazon, our investors, our customers, our students for FBA mastery. Creating content, creating public content, creating content behind the paid wall for people who paid us. You see what I mean? It allows me to prioritize. Okay, so again, you have DNA over here, and then over here you have your competencies. These both matter 50-50, but remember, DNA is more important. Now, let me walk you through how we found our president. We went through a pool of 1,800 people leveraging a headhunting service called Recruit Rockstars. 1,800 people. Of those 1,800 people, 88 said, I'm interested, I'd like to talk to Seth. Those 88 were automatically dropped into a spreadsheet, and every single one I went through and I studied their LinkedIn as most in-depth as I could. And once I filtered out those who I was not interested in talking to, I phone interviewed 29 of them. Of those 29 whom I phone interviewed, and by the way, those interviews were anywhere from 20 to 40 minutes. It's really a filter. You ask a few questions to figure out, is this person worth spending the time to go into hours of interviews with? Of those, we ended up with just a handful of people who we said, yes, we want to move forward to in interviews with these people. And that was 8 people. Of those 8 people whom we had already phone interviewed, we now had 3.5 to 4 hours of video interviews with. I'm talking long in-depth interviews where we talk about everything under the sun. And not just one long interview. I interview them, Josiah interviews them, Jeff would interview them, Josiah and I would both interview them. Like, it was a lot. Of those 8 people, we ended up with 2 final candidates. Each of those final candidates, we flew to Austin on separate days and they worked with myself and Josiah all day on a test project. The way we did it is we threw up a slideshow. It had about 8 slides. We gave them general information and we gave them the mission. And once we gave them the mission, their job was to create a plan for executing on the mission. By the end of the day, of each of those 2 in-person interviews, we had a pretty good idea of which one was qualified. Now, quickly, just for fun, I want to tell you why we chose one candidate over the other. And by the way, doing a test drive with your candidate is so important. This has saved us hours and hours of time, even all the way down to doing very simple video editing. With our video editors that we have, before we even interview them, we send them a test. And we're like, we're not even going to look at your resume, your application, until you do this test. A very simple test, won't take that long. And they have to record their screen showing us how they're doing it. Why? Because it will save you time. We've onboarded so many people who were the wrong people because we didn't put in place the correct filters to filter out people who never would have been a good fit from the beginning. So the test drive is even more important with a high-level position as a president. Now, some of you are probably going, Seth, what is president? Okay, CEO's at the top, and then usually underneath you have COO, chief operations officer or chief operating officer, CFO, chief financial officer, CXO, chief customer experience officer. That's what Josiah is, and I'm CEO at the top. Well, president is one step above all those C's, but one step below CEO. So a lot of companies don't even have a president. And what distinguishes a president, for example, from a COO? Well, a president is also responsible for doing hiring for the entire company, as well as recruiting and training and firing. Like, they're responsible for all the staff. There are some CEO positions, there's a mix who are responsible for that too, but a president really nails the position. It's one step lower than the CEO. I'm still here, I'm not changing, I'm still gonna be involved, so we're not gonna replace me, we're going to complement me and my weaknesses as well as Josiah's. And that's why we came up with that position. So now I'm gonna take you a little more in depth through the process we went through. How did we find this person? So remember, we're pulling from a pool of 1,800 people. Of those 1,800, 29 we decided are worth the time to do a phone interview with. Now, by the way, for all the other people who said, hey, I'm interested, we emailed them and said, hey, appreciate it, but we're not interested. Of the 29, I picked up the phone, I scheduled a call, and I talked to them for 20 to 40 minutes. Now, how did I decide that those 29 people were worth spending the time of a phone call with? Well, I'll tell you, I created a spreadsheet, and there are specific questions I asked myself based on looking at their LinkedIn profile. Number one, this is so important, you guys. They have to have a maximum of 3 positions in the last 9 years. In other words, on average, they've been at each company in the last 9 years for 3 years or longer. If they've been there less, it brings me to question, well, why? I mean, if you're really that good, then why did the company let you go? Well, I found a better opportunity. Well, why didn't the company you worked for counteroffer and give you such a great raise or salary that it was worth you staying? Or was there a problem with the leadership? Or was the problem you? In fact, there was one lady I interviewed. We had a great conversation, great lady. But one of the questions I asked her is, and I always ask them this, I say, okay, so let's assume this goes really well. This is a phone interview, 20 minutes, 40 minutes before we get into the in-depth interview. I said, if we do get to the point where we do in-depth interviews, who will you be giving to me as a reference to call? I always ask this question. Thank you, Jeff Hyman, who taught me this. And she said, well, I can give you this person, that was a colleague, and this person, it was a vendor, and this person, it was a subordinate. And I said, okay, that's great, but what about your manager? Well, not at my current company. Well, I get that, of course not. I mean, I don't wanna risk your current job. What about the previous company? Oh, I won't be giving you his name. Why? Well, we just didn't hit it off very well. What do you mean you didn't hit off very well? Well, let's just say his P didn't like my J. Now, if you watch the podcast I did with Adelie Kniep, my daughter, on MBTI, the Myers-Briggs something something, which talks about personalities, you'll know that the P is prospecting and the J is judging. And prospectors tend to be like me. It's like, whoo, that's a cool opportunity. Let's go for it. Come on, everybody. Let's just do what it takes. And we will build our wings on the way down. It's a fun way to live. Kind of dangerous. Those kind of people tend to marry J's, like my wife, who is much more like, okay, yeah, but what about this, 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 and this? Are you sure this is gonna work, right? And J's tend to be the other extreme. They're like, well, wait a minute, that's not the plan, so why are we changing the plan? Well, there's an opportunity over here. No, but this is the plan, we must go with the plan. But you're gonna miss an opportunity. Yeah, but there's too much risk. Well, let's figure it out, we'll figure it out. You see what happens? So J, they're really good, the judging trait, at keeping predictable systems, following the rules, making sure you de-risk yourself. And the high prospects are like, that's a cool opportunity. And to some people that might think, oh, you're that's just, you know, this impulsive, take risks, don't think. It doesn't mean they don't calculate risk. I'm very calculated. It just means they're more open to change. A simple example, my wife and I are driving somewhere and I'm like, wait, why don't we go to this restaurant instead? She doesn't like that. But this restaurant, it has better vegan food based on reviews. Yeah, but that takes us off our plan. Who cares? You see what I mean? Prospecting is totally comfortable with change if it makes sense to them. Whereas judging is like, let's stick with the plan. Now, judgings are really strong because they want to build a scalable system that's predictable and saves time. If you're constantly changing your plan, you're going to frustrate the heck out of everyone. And you are going to have problems on efficiency. However, if you're only judging and not prospecting, you're gonna miss some opportunities and you might fall more in love with the system than the whole purpose you were doing it for in the first place, and that is to help people grow their margin, which is what we do. So this lady, she's like, you know, his J didn't like, or his P didn't like my J. And I said, tell me more about that. And she really couldn't share more. I said, okay, well, what about your previous company? By the way, this lady, her potential was strong. Like, I was getting disappointed. I realized I was already starting to think, man, this would be such a great person. Why do I have to hear this? I asked about her previous position and she said she couldn't give me that manager's information. And I said, why? And she said, well, we had a fallout. And then I thought, okay. And now I'm very honest with people on the phone. I don't say that a lot of people like to do this. Oh, thank you for your time. We'll let you know in 24 hours if we want to consider. Let me talk to the team. Sounds nice, right? No, I am blunt and I'm upfront and I say, look, here's what I like. You have an amazing resume. You've done an amazing job. You worked for some very high-end fashion companies. You know marketing, you know systems, you know people. I think you'd be phenomenal. But the reason I'm not going to move forward with the interview is because you won't give me the contact information of two of your managers. I mean, one is a little bit of a concern, but two, that ain't a yellow flag. That's a red flag. And if there's anything I've learned in hiring, if there's a little tiny flag at the beginning, it's going to be a big flag in the future. Remember that. If you see smoke, there's probably fire. And so I said no. And she was cool. She was professional enough to respect that. She said, I understand. In fact, if I was in your shoes, I'd probably do the same thing. Wow. I love it when people have that kind of attitude versus people like the other person who emailed me a few days ago. And they're like, Seth, would you give me a loan? You gave away your Tesla. You gave away $136,000 worth of, would you give me a loan on with interest? Or would you just give me money? Help me. If you want to help them, you'll help me. And I said, no, I want you to go figure it out. But here's some tips. You got to go learn that. This is a great lesson. And the response is, how pathetic. It's like, oh my goodness. Like that's a DNA issue right there. That person will never be an investor and done for you with that kind of thinking, unless there's a massive proof of change, because that would be a problem in the future. So when you see a red flag, don't justify and compromise or rationalize. That's the word. Don't rationalize away. Oh yeah, because you're focused on, oh, they do so good at this. Prospects, beware. You have to look at the data and you have to have your guard up. You cannot fall in love too quickly. Don't start thinking, oh, the honeymoon's going to be amazing. No, it's not. If there's red flags, you need to know what they are now so you know whether or not to move on. Well, Seth, what if it really wasn't a red flag? It was still best to move on because you don't know and you don't have time to take that kind of risk when you are running a multi-million dollar company. Okay. So we're just getting started here. Oh my goodness. We have 88 potential candidates. They're dropped into a Google sheet. I created this whole system. And the first question is, they've been maximum at three positions in the last 9 years. In other words, longevity is really important to me. The president that we sent an offer letter to, which he said yes, by the way, worked at his last company for almost 10 years. Or was it 13? Is that a bad sign? I don't remember. You get the idea though. Like a long time. And the previous company, a long time. In fact, the previous company he worked for, he left because they started focusing on, I almost picked up my phone. They started focusing on daily planners. Like, you remember back in the days of daily planners where you write out your plan? I'm that old. They started focusing on daily planners. He's like, guys, it's late 90s. We got to focus on software. And they said, no. So he left, worked for an e-commerce company. And guess what? Had a boomerang hire. They hired him back. That's damn good. That's impressive. There are very few people in this world who have been hired back. That means that company, he wasn't perfect. He's not perfect, but they respected him enough to feel like it was worth it. So back to this, the first question, as I'm looking at their LinkedIn profile before I have the phone call to decide whether or not I should have a phone call, is have they been a maximum three positions in 9 years? And for each question, there's a little drop down of 1 to 3. 3 means great, 2 means okay, 1 means bad. So at the end of all these questions, it sums them up and I have a grade. And that grade tells me if it's not a minimum number score, I will not have the phone call. See how that removes the emotion out? That removes the personal biases out? Let's admit it, guys, we all have biases. That's why you have to look at the facts. You need some kind of objective system outside of your instincts. Think about this. You interview Bobby McGee, then you interview Lucy. Both are great candidates, but because Lucy was the last conversation you had, so you feel a little more emotionally engaged and hyped up about her, you have what's called conversation bias, where you tend to believe the last thing you heard from the last conversation you had. You go ahead and send her the offer letter instead of him, even though if you'd looked at the facts on paper during the interview and written it down, you would have realized Bobby was a better candidate than Lucy. So you literally have to protect yourself from yourself. This requires a massive amount of self-awareness. Do you know it took about, 60 to 70% of my day just doing this hunt? It was a lot. And thank God I have an amazing team, brand builders, the content team, the video production team, the finance team. Like, they do an amazing job. There's no way I could have done that if they hadn't been here hustling behind the scenes so we could find a president, which will ultimately help those of you guys who are members of Just One Dime or investors in the Done For You program. Next question is, within the last 5 years, helped grow a small company that is now medium large. This is very important. Look, I worked for a $1 trillion company. I mean, it was the most profitable company on God's planet. Well, I know there's more planets, but you know, planet Earth, the one we live on. Apple, the role I had to play there compared to the role now of growing and building Amazon stores, first for myself, then for others, creating content for that, building a team, like, it is so different. It's like alien by comparison. Now, I'm not saying there weren't good things I learned from Apple. Lots of good things. But man, there's a big difference between working for a massive company. In fact, one of the candidates who we took out on a test drive, he works for Amazon. Great candidate, by the way. Amazing person. Loved his DNA. But my biggest concern was his experience level when it comes to growing a small company to large was just not there. And even during the test drive, I said, you're used to having miles of money, not your money, but the company's money, Amazon's money here, and miles of staff here. You have all this huge, like almost like a bubble of cushion around you. And you just have to focus on your organization within the organization. If you make a mistake, it's not the end of Amazon. But if you make a mistake with a small, tiny company like Just One Dime, it easily could be the end. They have to feel that. In other words, if you're on the Titanic, you don't think about the rudder. You don't think about the lifeboats. You don't think about the base and the hull. You just think about your chair where you're working or your place. But if you are a sailor on your own sailboat and you are the captain, you have to think of everything. And one iceberg hit could be the demise of your company. You have to feel that. And that was a big difference between the two final candidates to do the test drive. So that's why we said within the last 5 years, they helped grow a small company that is now medium to large. Next, experience growing a content-driven company. We are very content-driven. Our marketing has been our content. We put out what we believe, humbly, the best content on planet Earth. I mean, when we did that video on sales tax, people have no idea how much research went into making sure everything was accurate. I mean, not even, I'm gonna brag, TaxJar and Avalara, I mean, these are tax companies, but I couldn't find a single blog that just really explained everything. Like, come on, guys. So we did it. And we rank really well for that. We are committed to providing the best content. Well, guess what? This person needs to understand that. That's called content marketing. Next one, this is an obvious, building teams. As I told you, the most important asset of the core assets is people. If you don't have a great team, your company will reach a peak. It won't keep growing. If you want a one-man show, one-woman show, fine, do that. That's a lifestyle company. That's not who we are. We are what's called a legacy company. I hope Just One Dime continues 100 years after I'm dead, helping people far beyond my life. The next one is running systems. I talked about that. Software, automation. Things that run so you don't have to focus on them. You can focus on what matters the most that brings better value to your investors and students. The next one is marketing, of course, because as I said, we need to increase our marketing. The next one is DNA first impression. Now, this is super subjective, I know, but just talking to them, I just ask myself, am I hearing chew? Am I hearing those DNA I listed to you earlier? Am I hearing that? And there's a part where, I messed that up. I mean DNA first impression from their LinkedIn resume, their LinkedIn profile. That's what I meant. So all of this stuff I'm looking at LinkedIn, I'm trying to understand. And then based on the final score, we got like 14 for one person, a score of 11, a score of 2, a score of 3, a score of 12, a score of 0. Like all over the place. And you know what one of the hardest decisions was to make? Does this person need to be in-house? I mean, this Friday, we have one of our potential investors coming into Austin. In fact, we had one of our current investors showed up here last Friday, and we got to chat and everything and hang out a little bit, which was awesome. They do that because they just want to make sure this is real because there's so much posing and fakeness online. Are you guys real? Are you a robot? Are you a clone? Like, we're real. We're here in an office in Austin, Texas. But here's what a lot of people don't realize. Our teams are not all here. Many of our staff are remote. We have teams in different states. We have a team in Oklahoma, a team in New Jersey, two teams in Miami. Like, It's not just one central, this is the headquarters because this is where the founders are. And so it brought us to the question, should this person have to work in-house? And we decided, yes, he should. Why? Well, you can't beat sitting across from the table and shaking their hands and saying, good job, and let's talk and collaborate. That's great. I mean, who wants to stare at Zoom all day? This little tiny box, all I know you is you're like a 7-inch person on my screen, and all I see is your face with light on it. It's just not personal, you know? And then Jeff Hyman kind of burst our bubble, and he's like, guys, look, if you're going to require this person to be in-house in the office, you might run into a little bit of a problem. You're going to have a much smaller pool to pull from. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, how many people are willing to move to Austin, Texas? I said, a lot. Austin's an awesome city. It's doing really well. He said, yeah, I get that. But a lot of people won't even consider it if it's not remote. And after COVID, people are used to remote. In fact, a lot of these candidates I spoke with, they used to be in-house, now they're remote. Ooh, the world is changing. So I have to actually be aware of what's happening in the world in order to grow my company. Bummer! And so we decided we're going to pull from a bigger pool and we're going to allow it to be a hybrid position. Now, what does that mean, Seth? Well, it means they have to be willing to fly out here a few times a month. Of course, we'll pay for that and all that goodness. And we'll balance the cost of travel and hotel and airplane tickets with the ROI. So for the first month or two, our president and two other people will be coming out quite often, once a week. And then after that, every other week. And then after that, we'll see, maybe once a month. So because you can get a lot more information, there's better connection when you're there in person. But I don't want to restrict it to having to be here. There's a lot you can do remotely. I mean, heck, Amazon is remote. The customers are not walking through the door. The customers are going to Amazon and buying our products. And we're making money from that. That's remote. So why can't we do the same thing with our core team providing content as we build Amazon stores for investors? I got to take a sip. So I went through all these questions, came up with a score, and then decided, okay, here are the people I want to interview, which was 29 of the 88. So we got down to the 29 and I called them and I had questions. And I'm going to share with you the exact questions I asked them. Now, here's the key. You must ask the same questions to every candidate. Because if you don't, you do not have objective data. If I ask Bobby McGee, why is he interested in this position? But I ask Lucy, why is she open to leaving her current job? I'm not going to get the same kind of data. You can't, it's like a scientific experiment. Everything has to be consistent, minus in this situation, their answer, so I can measure it accurately. You know, when you're trying to optimize a listing, like, okay, maybe it's the photo. And you make the mistake, and I did this many times in my early days, where you switch out the main photo and you change your PPC budget and you change the copy and the title and you change the bullet points and it starts selling better and you go, great. And then you go, which one made it better? I don't know, because I changed four different things. You got to change one thing. One thing. And in this situation, the variable, the one thing that changes is their answer. Now, I'm not saying, if you ask this question, let me give you the first one. I'll say, what are you working on these days? That's my first question. I'll say, look, I looked at LinkedIn. It was impressive. I know we're all busy. We don't always keep it updated. So what are you working on? Just a super general question. Now, if when I ask the question, they say something that gives me an idea and I ask them a question off of that question, like a sub question to the question, what are you working on these days? Perfectly fine. No problem. Good. But the main questions have to be the same. If you want to have objective data, so you can compare everything. The second question on the phone is, what is your biggest accomplishment in the last two positions? Now, you're not just listening for what they say, but for how they say it. Like, I had one guy, he's like, yeah, my biggest accomplishment in my last position is I built really great team morale. That's like saying nothing. Like, what does that even mean? People started saying thank you more? You got to be specific. If he had answered the question like this, yeah, in the last year, our team celebrates every single victory and the complaining and negativity has dropped by 70%. And we did a survey and the satisfaction of their employment went up from 4 to 7 out of 10 points, 10 being the highest. Now that's measurable data. It's already telling me how they think. So if they give me nebulous, vague answers, I already know you ain't the right person. And I'm not going to spend the time training you how to think in a data-driven way for a company that we have sweat, bled, and suffered to build to this point. The next question is, what would you change in your current role? Now, the reason I'm asking this, you're gonna like this one, is it gives me negotiation power. Like if Bobby McGee says, well, I really wish my boss would give me more ownership. Like really let me run the project. Let me fall on my face a few times. Let me figure it out and stop always being over my shoulder telling me this is wrong, this is right. Well, they just gave me negotiation power because when I do get to the final interviews, if this person is still a candidate, I can use that and say, oh, by the way, Bobby, in this position, you're going to have lots of ownership. I am not the kind of person who wants to look over your shoulder. I don't have time for that. I need you to literally run the operations so I can focus on serving our investors and our students. See the difference? The next question is, who would your references be? Remember, I gave you the example of the lady who I asked what her references would be, and there was two she would not even give me of her managers, which is a dangerous thing. The reason I asked this question is you don't want to get all the way down the line to the very end, and they're like, references? Oh, I'll give you a lot of my subordinates. They're going to say nice things about me and my mom and my dad and my dog and my friend. Okay, that's great, but I need to hear about your managers, your bosses. Oh, I'm not comfortable. I'm not going to hire someone if I can't talk to at least several of their previous managers, because the manager will give you the most honest information. They don't have any incentive to flavor things unless they're paying them on the back end. So this is a really fast way to filter out. I mean, they might score great. And if this question, they can't give me the information, well, hey, I found the red flag before the red flag found me, and it saved me about 14 hours of my life. The next question is, would it be okay if we talk about compensation for a moment? Now, a lot of people don't understand why I would ask this question up front. Only one time of the 29 phone interviews did someone ask me, Seth, how much does this pay? Most people aren't comfortable in that first phone interview because it makes them look a little greedy. Hey, look, I want people who want to make money. Absolutely. That's like literally, we teach you how to make money. That's our motto. So you can have margin. Like that's our motto. That's what we live by. That's why I started selling on Amazon. That's the whole purpose I left Apple. But there's a different reason I'm asking this question. I want to know if we're even in the ballpark of what they're looking for. In other words, as a general rule, you want to give them a 25% increase in their salary. If you can't do that, then you're probably not the right company for them. Something else you need to understand, this is taking me so long to learn. So if you can learn this in 5 minutes, thank God. You want an A player. You don't want a B player. You don't want a C player. You want an A player. You want the top 2% of people in the world. Like if you could take all the people in the world, the top 2% best people, those are the people you should hire. Why? Not only because they will hire more A players, you will save yourself so much time and money in the long run. Yeah, but Seth, I have to pay them like $80,000 more a year or $200,000 more a year. So what? They will make you that much more a year and then some. Find A players. Man, if there was anything I could just drive into the brain of everyone listening, do not settle for less. Did you guys watch the movie Nightcrawler? Really good movie. It's intense. There's this guy who wants to be not a TV reporter, but like a, I don't know what you call it, a news company. They go and get videos of horrible things that happen in LA and they sells it to a news company. And he hires this dude who's homeless. And from the beginning, this dude is a terrible employee. And I noticed the boss, who himself isn't that great, because B players tend to hire B players and C players tend to hire C players. Remember that. If you get an A player, they will draw those kinds of people towards them. You will have a stronger company and you will crush the competition. And this employee is terrible. Like he can't even get the directions right. He's supposed to navigate while the guy's driving. He's like, oh, turn right, turn left, turn right. And he keeps missing. Like by 5 blocks, he misses the turn. And instead of thinking, you know, maybe I hired the wrong person, because this is not like a training issue. This is just like a responsibility issue. Anyone can learn to read a GPS, right? The guy should have thought of that already. You don't sit down and say, make sure you get directions right. Like that's insane. You don't teach a 10-year-old how to walk. They should know how to walk. And so he tries to change him, which creates frustration, which ultimately ends in something terrible happening, which I'm not going to share because I don't want to spoil the movie. But it's a good movie. Some of you may not like it. It's intense. There's a lot of blood, a lot of dark things, but I think it's a very well done movie. Okay, so I asked a question about compensation and here's how I ask it. Again, I give Jeff Hyman full credit for this. How is your compensation currently structured in terms of fixed versus variable versus equity? Now, some of you guys are like, what did he just ask? Okay, all I mean is, how much are you paid, fixed, your salary, versus variable versus equity. A variable would be like you get a profit share, so it varies. And equity is you maybe you own 1, 2, 3% of the company. That's all. It's like the whole compensation package. And then I say, what is the total scope of it? And then I shut up like this. I say nothing. Because if you keep talking, you're not going to get the honesty. And then about 70% of the time, according to Jeff Hyman, and I can validate that, that's about right. In fact, I think for me, it was more like 90%. They provide the numbers. They tell you what it is. And the remaining 10, 15, 20, 30% give you an outline, but they don't give you the actual numbers. And so I say, what was the total last year? And it makes them uncomfortable. And if this makes you uncomfortable, good. Consider it growth. You have to ask these questions. If you're scared to talk about salary, if you're scared to ask them, maybe they're uncomfortable, but ask them how much they make. You need to consider if you should be even running a business, because come on, guys, this is your business you're trying to run. You don't have time to waste and beat around the bush. Get to the point. You want someone who can handle that. If you're trying to hire someone, get to the point. Find out what they're getting paid. Because if they're getting paid, $500,000 and you're only paying $200,000, well, that ain't gonna work. And you should already know in advance how much you're willing to pay them. It should be a range. It should be 25% higher than what they're getting paid, but you need to know that range. You need to know the numbers in your head. Look, if they're getting paid anywhere from here to here, they're in. Anything above, So ask them the question. I had one lady, I asked this question. She goes, well, how much are you paying? I said, why is she negotiating? This is the phone filter interview. This already concerned me. I was like, look, I'm not negotiating. This isn't the negotiating part. I'm literally trying to find out what you're paid. This is an honest conversation to see if you're in a ballpark. It was almost as if her assumption was, I want to see how much she's getting paid. Let's just say it's $250,000. Oh, we were going to pay $400. Oh, we'll pay you $275, see, so we can save money. Like, that's insane. I wouldn't do that. And if she's thinking that way, that's an indication she might be that kind of person. Get what I'm saying? People who assume dishonesty tend to be dishonest themselves. People who assume the negative, they're often reflecting their own values. That's why so many people online who go online just complaining and whining and this and that, oftentimes they're reflecting their own person, what they would do, instead of thinking, wow, there actually are some people who sincerely want to do the right thing. Can you imagine? Okay, so, man. Oh, there's so much more I want to share. I got to keep moving, but I hope this is helpful. So after I ask all those questions, I immediately have 5 minutes to go in here and do another drop-down list, and I'm going to quickly tell you what all the questions were. Did they successfully recruit, hire, and grow a performance team? 1, 2, or 3. 3 means they did it well. 2 means yes. 1 means they didn't. Did they successfully grow a brand via paid ads? Because we need paid ads. Again, the same thing. 1, they didn't. 2, they did. 3, they blew it out of the park. Did they successfully grow revenue via marketing funnels? Did they demonstrate, this is one of the most important, an analytical approach to driving results, that is KPIs, that means key performance indicators for the team? In other words, how do you measure success? That's one of the most important questions someone could ask. In fact, want to hear something cool? When we brought out the final two candidates for the test drive, they both showed up here. This is so awesome, you guys. The first one, I said, look, if you want to meet with the team who's here at headquarters, feel free to. He's like, I would love to. I said, would you like me and Josiah to be in the room or not? He said, oh, you guys can be in the room. They came in and Josiah and I didn't say a word. Ask the team. We said nothing. And he asked them questions. And I felt so proud because our team shared things they love and shared things they don't like about Just One Dime. That is a sign of a good team. A lot of people, I would have been terrified to say that with one manager at Apple, not the other, because I would feel like I'm tattling on my boss. But the other boss created an atmosphere where that was okay because he listened. He wanted my feedback. The other one didn't. That's a good sign. And that blew them away. I know I'm tooting my horn. I'll stop tooting my horn. I just want to show you that. Try to create a team where people can be honest. How do you do that? You don't punish them for being honest about something negative. You know what's so bad? You see this manager, they're like, hey, give me feedback. How am I doing? How can I be a better manager to you? And so they share with you list 1, 2, and 3 things. and the manager starts defending themselves or telling the employee how they could do better. Oh, if you want me to do that, then you got to do this. That's horrible. You need to shut up and listen. But Seth, isn't there a time for giving your direct report feedback? Yes, of course, but that's not the time. Literally, you're training them to be afraid of telling the truth. I'm sure I've done it before. We do this without even knowing we're doing it. You have to create an atmosphere where people don't feel afraid to be honest. Now, remember, there's a difference between being honest and being negative. Negative, no room for that. Honest, please. How can we grow? Okay, the next question that I clicked on the little drop down and selected 3 or 2 or 1 based on the phone interview is, do they have a proven track record of managing multiple projects at the same time? This position requires that. Like, you got to be really good. Next question, are they tough enough to get the job done, fire as needed, hold the bar high? You want to know one of the most challenging things you will run into when you bring in a new manager or high level position? Is they might have to fire some people. Are any of the staff listening right now? I don't know if they are. Hopefully they're not. No, literally, they may have to fire some people. And so you have to be honest with them up front. If you're giving them the power to hire and fire, like that's what you want them to do, you have to give them permission to do that with people who've already been here, which can cause a lot of consternation. That's tough. They have to be the kind of person who's tough enough to filter out the people who are not A players. Otherwise, it compromises the entire team. I don't mean coldlessly, heartlessly say, you're gone. I don't care about you. I don't mean that. But I mean, they literally have to have the integrity, the honesty to do what's best for the company. Because when you do what's best for the company, you will do what's best for your employees. That's how they get paid. That's how your company grows. Everyone benefits. But if you hold on to someone just because they've been with you for a long time, because you had some kind of family connection or because you like them, it's unfair to the other staff who are working harder, who are more worthy of the wages based on the output that they're doing. It is unfair to them. It compromises the integrity of the organization. So if you bring in a high level position, they have to have that freedom. Now, again, there's a balance here. I don't mean they come in on day 2, they fire a bunch of people. I mean, they literally take a close look and make recommendations and you do it together. You don't just say, oh, do all the bad stuff for me. I don't want to deal with it. No. You get involved, you help. That's something a lot of people struggle with today. There's a sense of entitlement that, well, because I've been with the company for so long, how dare you fire me? I'm gonna give you an example, okay? This is the best way to give you an example of this. I go to C12. C12 is a group of business owners and CEOs that get together once a month. Sitting to my left, I'm not free to share the name, but is an Amazon seller and he reached 80 million in the last year. He's been doing it for 45 years. It's an awesome job. So he and I have so many cool stories to share. It's awesome. He started with a friend and they pretty much built this business together. As the business grew and they hired on more and more staff, I think they're like 15, 17 staff now. They're about to be acquired by a huge company. As they grew, he had to tell his friend something very tough. He had to say, hey, you no longer are going to be like, I forget what his role, I think it was COO. You're now going to be 3 levels down. I'm pretty sure he didn't lower his pay, which was nice. But the company outgrew the employee. This happens. In fact, if you can teach your employees this at an early stage so they understand that can happen, it's fair to them. Because some people, they don't get it. They just feel like, oh, you didn't care about me and I'm gone. I've given so much. Companies need change. And there are a lot of situations where as a company grows, that particular employee no longer is a good fit for the company because they didn't grow at the same acceleration as the company. And you brought in higher, heavier hitters. And now by contrast, that person is no longer an A player. They're a B or a C player. You see? What's so cool about the story is the CEO did such a good job of preparing his friend for this. And his friend too. You know how it gets personal when it's family and friends? The guy's still there, he's happy to be there, and he's gonna continue to work for the company even after it is bought out by a bigger company. In a sense, you could say he got demoted 3 times, but he's still there because he gets it and he loves what he does and he loves the team he works with. That's a good story. Not all stories end that well. The next thing is I immediately write down a competency score. So I just gave you that was the competency score. The next thing is I write down the DNA score after the phone interview. I'm gonna go through these quickly. Humble by nature, happy to be behind the scenes, unassailable integrity, comfortable using logic to push back, hustles, gets the work done, results focus, crystal clear communication, and values doing things you love with the people you love. The same things we put in the original scorecard. Listen, when you're going to hire someone, you need to know exactly what they're going to do and the DNA and the competencies in order to get there. Now, just a few more thoughts. I have to wrap this up. There's so much more I could share. And by the way, if you're listening to this on a podcast, go to seth.com if you want to watch the video version. S-E-T-H, seth.com. Okay, just a couple more thoughts. I want to talk about the interviews themselves. Remember, the phone interview is a 20 to 40 minutes to filter out. It's a screening interview. Then you get to what's called the video interviews. This is 3.5 to 4 hours. First, I interview them and I ask them a truckload of questions. And it's these questions are actually pretty simple. I go through their work history. This is called the competency interview. Question number one, what were the start and end dates of the role? And I start way back 10 years. Why did I ask that first question? Because I want to make sure it matches up with LinkedIn, that they're not fudging the numbers. I want to see if there's a gap. Oh, I worked there from 1995 to 1997. Oh, well, LinkedIn says 1998. And the next position started 1999. So what were you doing between 1998 and 1999? Well, I was living under the bridge. See what I mean? You got to find this data out. And numbers don't lie. So ask the questions. Next question. Why did you choose to join that company? What's their motivation? Next question. What was the charter of the role? In other words, what were you tasked to do? Next question. What did you inherit? In other words, did you walk in with a team that's just blowing it out of the water? That's a good question, because if they give you all these amazing facts like, yeah, we grew our profits over 33% in 3 years, how do you know it was the candidate, or I mean the employee who you're looking at, or the team they worked with, and it would happen whether or not they were hired? This is how you learn that. Another reason you ask, what did you inherit, is what if they started with no team? By the end of their tenure, they had a team of 15 people. That's impressive. They grew a team. They had to hire. Those people stayed. How many of those people were promoted? How many of those people work for other companies now? Like, those are kind of questions you want to ask. Next question. What was the organizational context? That refers more to the team. Like, what was your role? Who was under you? Who was over you? Who were your colleagues? Who did you report to? What were your quantifiable accomplishments in this role? This is the most important question. And the reason I say quantifiable is it has to be measurable. You know, it is one thing to say, well, I grew our sales by 50%. Great. Give me specifics. What do you mean? What was the product? How did you do it? Give me measurable data. Don't just say, I helped us grow. I helped the culture. That's generic. They need to give you quantifiable. And if they don't, they may not be the right person. See, here's the thing, guys. You're not looking for someone who interviews well. You're looking for someone who thinks the way they need to think in order for this to even work. People who think in numbers and facts. I'm not saying they don't need emotions, but I'm saying if it doesn't have data, it doesn't stand. You could be the most feeling prospecting person in the world and still have a very good grasp on the importance of numbers, because numbers don't lie. How did you achieve those results? So when they tell you what they did well, well, I built a team of 15 people and they're all in operations and they're scaling the company and we started these programs and here's how they help the company grow year over year. Great. How did you achieve those results? Find out how. Get them to be specific. You know, the worst answer I can get is a nebulous general one. I want specifics. Next, what was your biggest failure in the role? This is a good one. You're not looking to see if they had a failure. And please, please, in the call, if they say, my biggest failure was working too hard. I try so hard and I just, yeah, I work too hard. I just work myself to the bone. You're not giving me a, and when someone says something like that, I say, how's that a failure? What employer wouldn't love to hear that you worked really hard? And the only advice they have to give you is slow down. No. You're looking for humility. You're looking for ownership. You're looking for someone who says, yeah, here's how I blew it up. And here's what I did to fix it. Next question. What challenges did you face and how did you overcome them? You know, if everything seems like happy land, clouds, sunshine, rainbows, probably not the right person. There are going to be problems. In fact, that's the one thing that's true of leaders. They kind of create problems in order to get to the end goal. I know it sounds a little self-contradictory, but it's true. They make changes and some people get upset and they have to work through that and figure it out. They disrupt things. They change things. You think Apple would be who it is today if Steve Jobs didn't step on a few toes and create some issues? And I think about it. Look at Microsoft. Look at Elon Musk. Look at Jeff Bezos. I mean, these guys have gone through so much crap and a lot of it caused by themselves, but they found a way. So what kind of challenges did you face? Here's another one. What was your manager style and how did you work together? This is important because if you're going to be their manager, you need to know what they loved and hated about their manager. And you're going to start to see patterns like, oh man, they just don't do very well with super direct people. Well, if you're a direct person, they're not the right person. Or man, they really wish their manager would give them more freedom. Well, boom, if you're the kind of person who loves to empower people to do well, then that's a good sign. The next question, what did you enjoy most and least about the role? Again, you're not trying to understand the role, you're trying to understand them. Equally important, almost more, is not what they say, but how they say it. How do they think? How was the compensation structured? Now, the reason I asked this, Seth, you already asked how much they made in the phone interview. I know, but I want to know profit share, equity versus salary. How risk averse are they? You know, if 20% of their money was through profit share, they're more risk open than someone who's like, I want a really big salary and little profit share, less incentivized. See? And if the role requires someone who can really have a direct impact on the sales of the company, then if they like higher profit share, that's probably the right person because they're incentivized thinking the more I get done, the more I make. See? But if the role doesn't have as direct impact on the income of the company, then maybe a bigger percentage of their income being salary makes more sense. So you're trying to understand how attracted or averse they are to risk. And then I say, if we get to the reference stage, what should I expect to hear when I speak with your manager? If they see anything less than, oh, my manager is going to rave about me. Like if they hem and haw and sound hesitant, that's a flag, red flag. And then you need to, if they do, you need to ask a follow-up question and say, why wouldn't they rave about you? What was the issue? You need to dig down. Always ask clarifying questions. Remember, it doesn't matter how much you like them in the interview. It matters how much data you receive. And notice all these questions are what we call historical questions. Tell me what happened. You can try as hard as you want to succeed in something. But if you don't know what happened, you have no valuable data to know what is going to go on when they join your company. So you don't want to start with, how would you help us? What would you do in your first 90 days? How would you grow a marketing team? They could have read a blog and make it sound great, especially if they're a good communicator. You need to know what they did. And by the way, when you do this for like an hour and a half, it's hard for them to lie if you just keep going. After a while, you're going to break them down. So hopefully they're not that kind of person anyways. But all these questions, oh, there's one more. Why did you choose to move on from this role? Were they fired? Was there a layoff because of a downsizing? Did they leave because they found a better opportunity? If they jump to a new job every 2 years, do you want that kind of person working for your company? All the time you spend investing in them and then they're gone? See what I mean? These are the kinds of things you need to understand when you ask. So those are all the questions. I'm going to list them below. By the way, these questions I got directly from Jeff Hyman. I don't take credit for any of them. Then we interviewed those people. I'm sorry, before I said it was six. It was six people we interviewed. Sorry about that. Of those six people, two of them we flew out here to do an all-day test drive. Then we did references. And Jeff Hyman helped us with the references. He actually did all of them for us. And we asked him to call people who the candidate didn't even recommend. And that's important. If you can talk to people who the candidate didn't recommend as well, and there's ways to find if you do your research, you're going to get even more honest answers. There's no prep. There's no like, hey, they're going to call you about a reference. Oh, hopefully say nice things about me. They're not expecting it. They're going to be more likely to spill their guts. Then after all of that, we have one more conversation. Say, look, what is your interest level in this position? 1 to 10. Oh, it's a 10. Awesome. We're really interested in hiring you. We want to send you an offer letter. Now we realize when we send you an offer letter, if you accept, your company may counter. What's going to happen? Get them thinking and talking about it now. Because if that company counters and they stay, I mean, you spent a truckload of time and you lost the candidate. You might counter then, and hopefully you have a little cushion in your budget to do so. But get them talking about it now. Well, I'm going to work with you guys. Okay, great. Awesome. So no matter what, you want to do this. Yes, I need to see the offer letter first, but yeah. Okay, cool. That's great. Now, what if they say, well, I'd have to look. You need to dig deeper. Help me understand. I need to know how serious you are. Because if they counteroffer and we lose the opportunity, I'd rather talk about that now. See what I mean? Well, how much are you going to pay? Tell them now. Now's the time to talk about it. Tell them what the pay is. Tell them what the variable is. Tell them what the equity is, if that's part of the plan. Tell them what the benefits are. So that way you know in advance, and plus it decreases the chance that they would respond positively to the counter offer from the company they currently work for. Okay, guys, there's a ton more I could share. Your takeaway, I hope, is simply this. You've learned a ton about people and a ton about how to hire the right people. One last really cool thing. This candidate who accepted the offer letter to be president of Just One Dime. Again, I'm not going anywhere. I'm here 100%. You will get full support for your Amazon stores. That's not, this will allow me to help even more, not less, okay? This president immediately found two people who he had already worked with, a VP of operations and a VP of marketing. So by getting an A player, we didn't just get one person, we get three. Find A players, invest in A players if you want your company to be an A player. Have a good night.